This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Hope you're having a great morning. And your number, if you're inclined to give us a call, is 877-217-5757. A reminder that later today, 2 o'clock, we'll be visiting with Governor John Bel Edwards. His monthly program, Ask the Governor, will be heard on WRKF. If you'd like to send us an email, the best way to do it is to go to your computer or your phone, go to talk@talklouisiana.org. We start with Mark Martin, who was with us a few months ago, one of the most avid bicyclists in this community, and one of the few times that he's, in fact, the only time that I can remember that he's been with us when he did not ride his bicycle all the way out to Corsi Boulevard. And good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Jim. How are you this morning?
Doing well. And Mark is at his day job. He is the processing archivist and photographic collections man, or person, at the LSU Hill Memorial Library, which is one of the great treasures in our community. And I'm sure many listeners probably are unaware of Hill Memorial. And before we get to the topic of note today, you are right in a treasure trove of history of Louisiana, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. We have a... Actually, you're right that we have this largely unacknowledged, vast collection of historical information about the state and the area and the lower Mississippi Valley. It's really a treasure that most people don't recognize. But if they want to come in, I have an exhibition up called We Built This City, Baton Rouge as a System of Systems, and it talks about urban planning and design. Downstairs features a number of 1947 aerial photographs by Fonda Winans.
Yeah, I was by there a few weeks ago and saw it, and it is an amazing exhibit and one that is one of the best-kept secrets in Baton Rouge. What are the hours in which the library is open, Mark?
The building is open from 8 until 5. We're open late on Tuesday until 7. And two Saturdays that sort of shift throughout the year from 9 until 1. This spring we try to do it like the second and fourth Saturdays.
Very good. Well, the driver of a vehicle that struck and killed East Baton Rouge Metro Councilman Buddy Amoroso and injured a friend last June has been sentenced. And the sentence was 90 days in jail for a conviction on reckless operation. This is a less serious offense than the initial arrest on negligent homicide, an offense that Amoroso's widow, Denise, calls a perversion of justice. Nicholas Alexander, who's only 21 years old from Lafayette, will serve a dozen days in jail because his sentence was suspended and he received credit for time served. This is the sentence that was imposed upon him. The district attorney in West Feliciana Parish is Sam DeQuilla, and he, of course, was in charge of the prosecution and obviously believes that this is appropriate punishment for the man who killed Buddy Amoroso. Your thoughts, Mark Martin?
Well, first, justice and the law are not necessarily the same thing. Clearly, this is not a just decision. It fits fully within the law. The grand jury that the charge went before couldn't find anything to charge the driver with, and that speaks very highly about the depth of our car culture, that that jury of his peers were all drivers, and I'm sure they empathized with driving and decided there was nothing that they could do about it, despite the overwhelming evidence that he did indeed caused the death and did it negligently. How we deal with that, I really don't know. It requires a change in our culture.
Well, DeQuilla, the DA in West Feliciana, says that Alexander has been fined $200. There is also a no-contest plea to an additional charge of negligent injuring. The district attorney says that that will involve sentencing on January 24th, so there could be additional punishment meted out to this man, Nicholas Alexander, who is responsible for the death of Buddy Amoroso. And in this case, it appears to be a clear case of negligence, no question about it. Amoroso did all the right things, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he was riding where he should have been riding. He was wearing the clothing he should have been wearing. He had the lights. He did everything he should have been doing. It was a clear day. There was no sun interfering with the vision of the driver. He was merely impatient, decided to pass according to his own statement, realized when he started to pass that he wasn't paying attention, that he couldn't pass. He pulled back in and hit both Buddy and Tom, and then he hit his brakes. Had he simply been a little more patient, none of that would have happened.
877-217-5757 is your number if you'd like to join the conversation with Mark Martin, who is a Navy veteran, served our country with distinction, and now works at Louisiana State University in an important capacity at Hill Memorial. But you go almost everywhere on your bicycle, don't you?
I do. I haven't owned a car since 1991. And last year I put on a little over 5,000 miles here in town on my bicycle.
And we've talked about how this is not a particularly bike-friendly community, and we're talking at this point about something that happened in one parish away, West Feliciana. And we discussed this to some extent in your last appearance, but a listener asks if there is still friction regarding the luminaries in West Feliciana Parish and bicyclists who, of course, like to ride in that area.
Well, as you say, the luminaries in West Feliciana Parish made their statement via their new ordinance, which is essentially an effort to ban bicycling in West Feliciana. Their response has been another terrific reflection of car culture. They blame the victim, and they want everyone to stay off their roads unless they're in a car. So. And then, of course, Kenny Havard, when he was in the legislature, effectively put an end to the attempt to get a vulnerable road user law through the legislature. As I recall, his statement was something along the lines of, if you're going to play in traffic, you get what you deserve, which is not particularly helpful.
Havard said that?
Yes.
Well, James Gill, the fine columnist for The Advocate, a few years ago wrote a column about, I think it was over 10 people in Louisiana were serving life sentences for possession of marijuana, this because it was a third offense. Now, it is an interesting prospect in Louisiana that you can go to jail for life for serving or for being found guilty of possession of marijuana, something many at the Jazz Fest, of course, would be in grave danger of being charged with a crime if they actually charge people at Jazz Fest. But at any rate, this man killed another man, clear case of negligence, and he's going to jail for 12 days. What does that say about our culture?
Well, nothing good. This is not the only example of this. A few years ago, a woman was somehow distracted, went off the road down an embankment and killed two children who were fishing in the bayou at the bottom. And again, the grand jury could not find anything to charge her with. She was fined, I think, $189 and spent no time in jail. To me, it says that as a culture, we value our driving above human life. That if you, it's a common thing to say that if you want to kill someone in the United States and get away with it, use a car. Don't do what the socialite in Houston did and run over your husband in the driveway four times and claim it was an accident. But nonetheless, we have this really skewed view of what's important when it comes to driving and homicide.
Now, Alexander's sentence was the harshest possible under law in our state for reckless operation, but if he had been found guilty of negligent injuring, and this could still happen, by the way, he could be sentenced to 6 months in jail. Denise Amoroso, now serving on the Metro Council, succeeding her husband, says, this was in her statement before the court, "I forgive you, but that does not mean you're excused from killing my husband." I think I'm told this was a written statement. "True repentance is telling the truth about what happened Saturday morning, June 30. You must realize you did not just kill a man on a bike. You killed a husband, son, father, grandfather, brother, friend, and a public servant who was admired by the citizens of Baton Rouge. And she calls it a perversion of justice, and I think many would agree with her. But there has not been a great outcry about this, a mild opposition and comment, but really not the kind of outcry that I might have expected. What do you think of that, Mark?
Well, all the comments I've seen have fallen on the side of the driver. And again, I think this is a result of car culture and people being more empathetic with other drivers than with somebody on a bicycle or on foot.
877-217-5757 or talk at talklouisiana.org, and we will spend a bit more time with Mark Martin after this brief timeout on Talk Louisiana. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And a few more minutes with Mark Martin, avid bicyclist. He said he rode over 5,000 miles, mostly in Baton Rouge, last year on his bicycle. Has not had a car since 1991. And this community is known as one that is not friendly to bikers. There have been a number of incidents and some deaths and near deaths, and Mark, you know far too well about some of the carnage on our streets, independent of what happened to Buddy Amoroso, who was killed June 30th of last year in West Feliciana Parish.
Yes, absolutely, and I think it's important to include in this the statistics regarding car-on-car crashes. Every year in this parish alone, we kill 50 people on average in car-on-car crashes. We send 10,000 people to the hospital, and we cause $135 million in property damage just in car-on-car crashes. The city has been declared a city of interest by the Federal Highway Administration because of the excessively high death rate caused by car, pedestrian, and car bicyclist collisions in the parish. And so it's not a good thing to be a city of interest for the Highway Administration.
Charlotte in Iberia Parish. Good morning, Charlotte. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Happy belated birthday. And I'd like to say that I think that people haven't considered the fact that bicycles and pedestrians were here before the four-wheel vehicles that are no longer horse-driven, and there are old film footage in San Francisco where everyone was sharing the road, and it was chaotic, but they weren't colliding with one another. And another thing I'd like to say is that people haven't also considered the fact that there is a bias against the 18-wheelers in making sure that we hold them accountable when they collide with smaller vehicles. And I think that should be applied with respect to the autos and trucks when they collide with smaller operators and pedestrians.
All right. Thank you, Charlotte.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye. Mark?
No, those are very good points. In fact, there was a book that was published not too long ago called Roads Were Not Built for Cars, because bicyclists actually drove the good roads movement in the United States and in England and the rest of Europe and the world. But the automobile took over and forced humans off of the streets and replaced humans with machines driven by humans. And we often think of motor vehicles as some kind of autonomous thing that doesn't involve a human. In our media, we refer to a car hitting something. We don't refer to the driver hitting something. It's a curious thing to see that, but that's, again, part of car culture that we are so inured to, we don't even see it. And yes, I think it's true that 18-wheelers, it's a scalable thing. The vulnerable road users is talking about that a person on foot or on a bicycle is more vulnerable than someone driving a 4,000-pound vehicle, and which is, of course, encasing the driver in steel, glass, and rubber. And so the driver should have a greater responsibility because they have the likelihood of creating more damage if they hit someone who is not in a vehicle. And likewise, you could scale it up and say that someone who is driving a semi, which may weigh, 20,000 pounds, has a greater responsibility than somebody who is in, a Prius. But this should be scalable, and it all comes back to the idea that we are all responsible for what we do, and we shouldn't try to lay that off on somebody else.
Well, this was a Chevrolet Tahoe, a big vehicle that hit Buddy Amoroso. The driver said he was driving 35 miles an hour, but police investigated and say it was closer to 55, which was the speed limit for Louisiana 66 in West Feliciana Parish. But it is a terrible tragedy, and of course, Buddy Amoroso cannot be brought back. It's awful. And Oliver and Hundred Oaks, you're on the air with Mark Martin. Good morning, Oliver. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Thank you for covering this topic. It's pretty important stuff. You know, I used to live in Atlanta, and I moved back here about 2 years ago, and I rode my bike all over the city. And people thought I was sort of crazy, but, you know, it was a lot of fun, and I felt safe. Here, not so much. I really feel like dismissing it as car culture doesn't do justice. Drivers in Baton Rouge are particularly bad, aggressive, beating, and I think there just needs to be more traffic enforcement in the city. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Oliver. Your thoughts, Mark?
Well, I think that this is part of car culture in that, and I don't mean to dismiss it by saying it's some small thing. It's a vast thing that affects almost every aspect of our lives in this country. We don't have the infrastructure for safe operation of people on foot and people on bikes and people in wheelchairs and people who are blind to be able to get from place to place as they wish to get from place to place because they have to compete with automobiles in limited space. If we put an emphasis on having the right infrastructure, if we demanded that people pay attention and we enforce the law as it exists, then a lot of these problems wouldn't exist. Drivers would become better because they would know that they were going to be punished if they disobeyed the law. As it is, you know, it's ridiculous. We don't do that. We hardly ticket anybody. If you look in the newspaper, there might be, particularly after like a football game here in the fall, there might be three people picked up for DWI. And if you've ever been on campus during a football game, which I'm sure you have, Jim, there are 100,000 people out here are drunk, and they're all getting in their cars and driving home. So we clearly don't enforce the law, and people, because of that, feel that they can just ignore the law, knowing there'll be no penalty.
Well, and on occasion, there are certainly people who ride motorcycles and bicycles who are inebriated, too.
I mean, it's a human thing. I'm not saying that anybody who is not in the car is somehow saintly, but that motor vehicles have an inherent greater risk.
Certainly. Have you thought about changing your lifestyle?
Only with horror. Sorry, bad joke. I have no desire to have a car or to be in one. It's now that I'm used to riding a bicycle, I very much enjoy it and would not want to give that up. I mean, my health is so much better than anyone that I know who's in a car. And if we did a comparison blood panel, it would show up immediately, the positive benefits of bicycling.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. We do live in a community, though, that still, after all these years, has some air quality issues. Does that bother you at all?
Well, I'm not a person who is in the risk group. I don't have asthma or other lung diseases, so it doesn't bother me in that sense. It bothers me in the larger existential sense that we are creating an environment that is harmed and harmful to others, and that we should respect. This is the only planet we've got. You know, if you can't breathe the air, then you're going to die. And why do we insist on continuing to put poisons in the air?
Have you had some close calls on the road, Mark?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I haven't been hit, but, I mean, there's plenty of people who are impatient. All of this would be not an issue if everyone who used the road just did these three fairly simple things, and that's to know and obey the law under the conditions that we see, to pay attention, which means put your phone down, stop using it while you're driving or riding or walking, and to be patient. In every incident that somebody has come close to interfering with me, 3 seconds would have changed that outcome.
Mark, we thank you. Always a pleasure. Continuing your good work at Hill Memorial Library, and I'm sure we'll have occasion to talk again soon. We'll return with Julian Zelizer, CNN political analyst, on what's going on regarding polarization.